I'm Neil from the Starling Tribune, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Check out all the other great podcasts at gunnageek.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Hello, this is Peter Davison. You're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. We invite you to join us each week for discussions ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi and beyond. Your GPR staff are Jay Witten.
You see how clever I was there? You make that connection? Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Keir Hansen.
Proactive. Reactive. Proactive. I'm making up words as I go here.
And Haley Malley.
Hey, that wasn't exactly what I was going to say at all, Jay. Thanks.
Oh, and
spoilers.
We do occasionally discuss recent news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired in their home territories. But don't worry. If we dip too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 221 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where we found that the truest way of honoring a program that we love and hold dear is to create other programs that aren't that one, and complain like children about how they aren't like the original. I'm your host, Haley, and with me this week in the GPR studios, we have Jay Witten. How are you today, Jay?
I really hate the remake of this GPR. The original was so much better.
And Keir Hansen, how are you today, Keir?
I can't wait till they replace that Keir guy. Holy crap. The recasting is going to be such a relief.
With the younger, blonder Keir.
Oh, my Fabio days. Well, this week we've decided to do what any good Whovian or really a fan of any long-running program is going to do, and get into an old-fashioned, unnecessary argument over superlatives. So, you know, the best, the worst, most memorable, most forgettable, and so on. But this time around, we're not going to look at the central program itself. We're going to take a little bit of a step to the side. So this time, we're going to look at the program's offspring, if you will. So if you're not going to count things like K-9 and Company, which we're not, and you're not going to count the Australian attempt at a K-9 series, which we're not. Doctor Who has had 3 fully formed successful spin-offs over its duration, all of which within the last couple decades. So you've got chronologically Torchwood, which premiered in late, I want to say October of 2006. And then Sarah Jane Adventures came around shortly thereafter, emerging in 2007. And then we've just had our first season of Class in 2016. So we're going to do a little bit of a tale of the tape. But not in the usual sense. We're not going to just tear it apart and say, well, you're defending that one, so I'm going to tear it up because I think, you know, Torchwood sucks or what have you, or anything of that sort. But we want to look at, you know, some of the categories that you may look to compare them fairly and sort of see how we feel about them. So I think we all kind of took a stance on each one of these. Jay, you took Torchwood, correct?
Right.
So by chronology, I will give you the first crack at... That's sort of, and we're going to look at a couple things here. I wanted to kind of start with just saying your general thoughts on the series itself about, you know, what it really, what the spirit of the program was and how it accomplished what it really set out to do.
Okay. So Torchwood, I feel like was almost the next logical step for a spinoff in Doctor Who. You had something that very clearly takes place in Doctor Who universe. That, I mean, it feels very much a part of it, especially with the, you know, the special guest appearances and crossovers and things like that. I mean, everything, it tied in so much that, I mean, we know people that have literally backed into Doctor Who because they watched Torchwood. You can't have one without the other. So I think on that aspect, it really did accomplish exactly what it set out to do, was to create an extension of Doctor Who proper. Okay. And, you know, one of the founding ideas that came up with Torchwood, how many times has someone referred to Doctor Who and said, well, you know, originally it was a children's program. And I mean, yes, to some extent it was. But it still kind of raises your hackles when you hear that. So you want to have a Doctor Who show and you want it to be geared for adults, that's exactly what you got with Torchwood. It's like, here's Doctor Who proper, and here's Doctor Who after dark.
Okay. I'm gonna grab one piece of what you just said there, talking about it's being an extension of the program as far as taking it off towards a different audience or different tone, and I'm gonna hold on to that because we're actually gonna take that specifically apart momentarily. Mm. I guess if we take in chronological order, the Sarah Jane Adventures would have come up shortly thereafter, which had a very different intent. As far as the general zeitgeist of the series itself, it was really there to be something that was, well, yeah, in very much the sense, this was Doctor Who light, and made that very clear throughout. You had something that was that involved a lot of the principal production team members of Doctor Who proper for that time, right around 2007. So it was an RTD production. You had Phil Ford and Gareth Jones and Chris, well, not Chris Chibnall. You have Chris Chibnall? No, you had Brian Minchin intrinsically involved in it throughout. So from a creative aspect, it had a very similar tone and everything, but obviously it was targeted towards your 10 to 16 crowd, maybe? And you might be able to kind of blur the edges on either end of that span, but it had all of the tone of Doctor Who at that time, you know, think 2007, so you're right around Tennant's second season. You talk about appearances and crossover and things like that. You had the Doctor appearing at least three intervals over the course of the, I'm going to call it five seasons because technically it is five seasons, but it was really four and a half because they got three stories in before we lost Liz Sladen. But you had constant mention of the Doctor. The Sarah Jane was constantly referencing previous escapades and adventures in order to see her way through challenges. A lot of villain crossover from Centaurans to Slitheen. You knew the Slitheen, if you were going to do a kids program, you were going to throw the Slitheen in there.
Well, yeah.
Fart jokes. Yeah. So it felt like you were watching more of the series, just geared towards your younger viewers. So if that was the intent, that's exactly what it nailed. I mean, even down to things like the score, you know, sounded, you know, the Doctor's theme ran throughout, the adventure themes, the running theme were always there. So it felt exactly what it set out to be. But for as far as class, Haley, how would, I mean, that billed itself as a spinoff, but what was it really setting out to do?
Well, I think it's going after the CW aged audience, you know, late teens, early to mid 20s, in probably a group that had come to Doctor Who for Matt Smith and might have gotten a little lost when Peter Capaldi took over. You know, they don't have their young, sexy Doctor to look at anymore. Mm. And I think this was a way to hold on to those people, maybe, if they're going into a younger Doctor after this, or maybe just to keep them as a part of this universe. You know, we've got this show, very Buffy-esque show, as we've said before.
Yeah.
To go after that demographic, which I think they did lose a lot of with Capaldi. And also just giving us more Earth-based stories and modern time stories. It doesn't seem like we've done quite as many of those with Capaldi as we did with previous Doctors.
Mm.
You know, just, you know, this is what's happening today in London.
Right.
So
that's true. I don't know if that was a budgetary thing or if it was just a matter of the kind of the conscious decision for that first, you know, being the fledgling season and things. Mm-hmm. We'll have to see, you know, obviously we're waiting to see whether or not it gets renewed for a second season.
And really the bulk of the show just only tangentially connected to Doctor Who. You know, he's there in the first episode and then we get the angels in the last episode, but everything in between, it's all new villains that we haven't seen before. Mm-hmm. There's no interaction with the Doctor or any of his companions that we've seen before. So it really kind of stood apart for the bulk of this show.
Okay. I'm glad you brought that up, because that kind of brings me to the second discussion point that I wanted to take apart, which was how these series function if you were completely unfamiliar with Doctor Who at all. You know, does it function as a series in its own right if you are completely, you know, if you've either been under a rock for however long is necessary, or if you're a younger viewer, or sort of, you know, just I never really got into that kind of programming, but this was on and somebody else was watching it and I kind of got sucked into it. Does it really stand on its own? Jay, I know exactly where you're going to run with this, but I want to hear you talk it through. So, Torchwood as a standalone series.
Heck yeah! I mean, it obviously worked as a standalone. I mean, like I mentioned before, you know, people got into this show and, you know, really enjoyed it and wanted to find out more about the universe that it came from. So it wasn't a thing of like, oh well, there's, you know, this Doctor Who spinoff, and I kind of like that show, but I wished it was different, so maybe I'll give it a shot. No, I mean, this was a show that they got into in their own right and said, yeah, no, this is absolutely a series that I enjoy and I want to find out more. So, I mean, if you look at the story as it progresses, and yes, it's very Doctor Who centric early on. I mean, you even had the Cybermen, you had, you know, appearances by, or not, oh, by Martha. The Doctor, but yeah, by Martha showing up, you had the Torchwood team showing up in Doctor Who, that kind of thing. So yeah, they tied it in, but by the time you get to the end of the series, I mean, this is a drastically different show than Doctor Who.
I think to a certain degree, probably those elements where they tapped into one another was really just a matter of as a bit of fan gift, because they mm-hmm. probably could have done just as well without it, at least as far as having, you know, core Whovian villains and references and things like that within Torchwood. It really didn't need it when it was really firing right. on all pistons. Obviously having, you know, Torchwood and Captain Jack back in Doctor Who proper was really just there as gravy because, oh, Barrowman's on again. Yay!
Yeah. Well, I mean, they were bringing everybody back at that point, so it would have seemed odd if they didn't have them.
Right, right. Now, I know with the Sarah Jane Adventures, it's, I would say that they probably... I may not be the best person to step forward and say that SJA would not work for people who weren't familiar with Doctor Who or didn't at least grow up with it in the household. Remembering your audience, you're dealing with going towards kids to give them something that is engaging for them, but obviously being written, you know, with so many episodes, especially some of the strongest episodes like Whatever Happened to Sarah Jane Smith, The Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith, Death of the Doctor, ones that were written by Gareth Jones. So you got, or Gareth Roberts, sorry. They are complex stories. And those are some of the ones that I think get a lot of the best critical acclaim because they were dealing with things like parallel universes, time loops, time shifts, the idea of memory wipes, and all these things that you're saying you're going after a 10-year-old. Well, if they're not at least somewhat familiar with, if they were being thrown at them in a Doctor Who episode, there might be a lot more explanation necessary. But because you're gearing the entire thing towards a younger audience, they actually do a bit of simplified exposition to help your audience member, which if you didn't end up watching Doctor Who, I could say, all right, you're still going to get an interesting kind of engaging science fiction story out of it where they're running and they're having their adventures and they're dealing with the rubber monsters and there's, you know, there's intelligent computers and all this other stuff going on and weird technology. We don't know how she got a sonic lipstick. That's fine. You know, but even if they never end up going forward to watch Doctor Who, they probably have fond memories of the series itself. And I'm willing to bet that there are a fair number of younger viewers from that period, and particularly our British listeners that would watch this or have their kids watching it on the CBBC. Let us know whether or not that was actually the case. Do you have kids that watched SJA and never really got into Doctor Who itself, but it worked on its own? I'd love to know. But I personally do not believe it was ever intended to be able to function without it. It was too closely meshed, from casting to production to effects to everything. They literally ran in parallel through the fact that you had both Tennant and Matt Smith appearing on it and having to explain regenerations and things, which wouldn't really be necessary. If you didn't care about tipping a hand to a Doctor Who audience, you wouldn't bother going through those explanations. You'd just say, oh, he's an alien, he can change his face. Move on to the next thing. But they were really farming the next generation of Whovians. I really think that was their intent, was they wanted to obviously be able to give something to younger viewers, but at the same time, there had to be that element in the back of their head saying, you know what, we're preparing new Doctor Who fans for the next 5-10 years out. And it's just, you know, it's an added bonus here if it's successful. So I'm sure it was. Now, class, Haley, I honestly do not know whether I had originally wondered before this got off the ground that this was going to be something that was going to try to, as you said, recapture the teens and the 20 somethings. But I don't know if that was really what it in.
It definitely could have caught that audience, but I don't know if it did anything to bring them to Doctor Who. I don't feel like there was enough of a tie to Doctor Who to do that, because if you rewrite the first episode, not even doing that much structural change to it, you can completely cut any ties it has to the Doctor Who universe, and it could be its own show, just, right, you know, on somewhere on the BBC or somewhere on the CW, and you pop a different villain in at the end to be like, oh my gosh, that's scary, what's going to happen in season two?
Right.
And it's not Doctor Who at all. But they might be leading into something, if there is a season two, they might be leading into something completely different in season two that does draw that audience back to Doctor Who. But what we have now, it's its own separate show.
Yeah. I've noticed it has taken very clear lines of distinction. They've never involved UNIT, even though they
name checked them a couple times, but yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm.
But not a single uniform. And in SJA, these sons of bitches were running into the scene constantly. In fact,
you should have seen UNIT at a couple of these things, like planet scale invasions. You would think somebody in a uniform would show up.
But see, one, two, some guard.
Coming from being a Doctor Who fan, yes, it was almost jarring that they weren't there for us. But to play into the point, for someone who wasn't coming from Doctor Who, you know, all of a sudden you've got this random government agency showing up with no explanation, nothing like that. It's just, eh. Yeah. It would have seemed.
And for some of the smaller events that happened in the school and resolved fairly quickly, like, that makes sense. The students are already there. UNIT doesn't have time to be notified. You can see how that would happen. But when you've got, like, alien slimy tendril things spreading all over town, like, nobody noticed?
Yeah.
They were the first ones to be taken.
Or the flowers of death, you know?
Yeah, exactly. The petals. And Jay, I would say, and we talked about this in a bunch of episodes back, about the real division between Torchwood and UNIT, and the fact that there was very, very little point where they ever crossed paths either.
Yeah. And I think that was kind of built into the idea of the show, was that these were meant to be, you know, the secret force. This was meant to be, you know, the X-Files versus the FBI. You know, it's that kind of difference that was built into it. So no, you're not going to see them, you know, show up at the same time. I think the closest we had was the bit with Martha. It's granted, it's been a while since I've watched any of that, but I mean, she was working with UNIT at the time, correct?
Yeah. She became one of their primary scientific advisors. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we do have some crossover, but essentially they're working on very different polar opposites here. So
yeah, it was kind of the difference between, you know, if UNIT was the hammer, Torchwood was the scalpel. You know, they were in, you know, small contained situations dealing with the Obscura, and handling things before they became the scale where you'd have to call in UNIT. They were kind of the first line of defense, I guess. Probably because they were most often the first ones tipped off, you know, literally sitting on the rifts and waiting for things to happen. So I guess we've kind of covered the idea of each of these series as an extension of the Hooniverse, but I guess it's still something was kind of rattling around in the back of my head too. And Torchwood kind of tipped this off. Class kind of ran with it, and that had to do with the fact that you've both alluded to people that might have caught that first that have decided to then go find out a little bit more about, you know, all these things that we're getting referred to. Torchwood has proven itself, Jay, as you said, to really draw a lot of people to work backwards into the program. Do you feel class will have that kind of effect given, you know, Haley, as you said, that you only had the Doctor well, mentioned a few times, always by Quill with derision. Him.
Right. I don't think there's anything in the first episode where we actually see him that if you aren't already a Doctor Who fan is going to draw you in. You might be at the end of the season, though. There's this new villain. Where does this... Why should this be scary? What is this? And that might draw somebody back to episodes like Blink and the other Angel episodes. I could see that working.
Yeah.
Except you can't go anywhere to stream it right now to go get those back episodes.
Yeah. And so, let's be honest, nobody's going to get invested in this show if we don't get a second series.
Yes, and that leads me to one last thing that just kind of struck me a little while ago, and that is because of the time spans that we're dealing with here. So, okay, you know, I know we've talked up on Blue Streak about the fact that bringing the U.S., Australian, and a couple of other neglected audiences considerable size viewing audiences to deny them exposure to class until April of this year, when Doctor Who proper for Series 10 returns. So those two will run concurrently within those broadcast audiences. Then we know from, well, and we'll discuss this when we get to the news, is that we're looking at Series 11 to be as late as, what do they say, fall of 2018?
Yep. I think I heard August 2018, September, yeah. Somewhere around there.
Right. So you're looking at another long span, because if we're talking standard broadcast year for, or broadcast season for Doctor Who, 12 episodes. So that's taking us from April through until midsummer. So now you've got another 12 plus months, you know, not counting the Christmas episode, which we're all going to be glued to because we want to figure out how we're going to see Capaldi out. But as far as the main series, you're dealing with another year gap again. So Class struggling to try and get its approval for a second series, do they have a shot if they keep stacking everything against its function as, you know, even your Doctor Who viewers may look at this, or to your U.S. audiences, and they might, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, they'll watch this season, and I'm sorry, you know, put your spoiler earmuffs on for the next 30 seconds or so while I pose this question, but so they watch it through, and they say, God, this doesn't have anything to do with moving the Doctor Who story forward.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm just a Doctor Who fan, I'm really not caring too much about these kids. I don't want to watch another series of this. So there's a potential viewing audience lost just on that premise. That's another strike against them for getting renewed.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, especially it's like, I want to watch this show to get more Doctor Who. I can't get more Doctor Who from it, but I can watch Doctor Who right now. So why would I watch this other show at all?
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's like, okay, well, I have 2 hours worth of viewing that I can do this week between work or school or whatever the heck it is. I can watch, you know, this other show that, you know, I can watch Game of Thrones and I can watch Doctor Who, or I can watch Game of Thrones and Class. Because let's be honest, nobody that's into Game of Thrones is going to watch, you know, is going to skip it. So.
I guess it's all a matter, again, it's going to come down to timing. It's going to come down to some of these programming decisions. And I know based on, I'm going to have to find it. I want to make sure that it's referenced. I shared it with you guys, but it was from that article. You have to be subscribed to the paper to get the full extent of the article. Did you read that over about the article with Moffat talking about his, you know, guys, don't come crashing down on me for programming decisions. I wait for my phone to ring just like everybody else.
Yes.
So everybody's saying, you know, it's so stupid that they're you know, they're waiting to run this and they're waiting to air this, and it's Moffat's fault because he's doing Sherlock and that's slowing him down. Well, actually, no. So, if you want to point your anger somewhere, point it right back at the programming geniuses at BBC, and ask them why. But yeah, I may throw that in as an extra point in the news, just because I think other people might be able to benefit from it. And they can chase the article down in full, but we can at least give them the short synopsis of it. But
yeah. I don't know. Maybe Class will air, you know, I think they said they were going to air it right after Doctor Who when it premieres in the U.S. Maybe it'll get huge numbers. Who knows?
Yeah.
And if that happens, then, you know, signs point to yes for season two. But we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, well, yes, it would definitely benefit more airing just after than just prior.
Right.
Okay. Want to play a little game?
Sure, let's go for it.
Yeah.
Let's play a game.
Okay.
Would you like to play?
Would you like to play a game?
Oh, geez, turn the computer off.
I'm going to ask, this may require a piece of paper from you. I'm not entirely sure.
Oh, my God.
But it might not. You might be able to do this.
So demanding.
I'm going to require a piece of paper just because I want to do this one.
It's a good thing I never do anything at this desk other than podcast, because I still have my paper here from last week.
Okay, so flip over your bingo sheet, which, by the way, Jay did get an opportunity to move a little step forward on our Galley one. As we're recording here, Galley is wrapping up on the west coast of the United States. Los Angeles is shutting down entirely as hordes of Whovians descend upon the streets with hunger in their bellies and their ears ringing from screaming in main room A. We'll try to share the results of our photo bingo next week.
Yes.
I know I have two squares covered. I don't remember whether they are in a row around our free space, but I do have...
Well, when you do it in Post-its, you can just move those squares around.
Nope. I took a photo of it. It's locked down. Immutable. But I did see some baby cosplay come around, and I did see Paul Cornell getting really excited on Friday night at his Cornell Collective. He was jumping up and down at his table there, so that qualifies. I just don't remember if they were in a row or not. Jay, you got some Bill cosplay today.
I did, alongside a practical Dalek. So yeah. That's two squares and one
Dalek
picture.
Was a given. Well,
yeah, that was.
But still, the fact that I got two squares and one picture. I mean,
that's true.
Pulling ahead here.
And you don't get two squares because there were two Bills in the shot.
Oh man.
You can't. It's just one square.
I get nothing for the awesomeness.
All right. So here's what I want to do. I don't really have a terribly snappy. I just called this game a day in the life, because it's kind of one of those. Have you ever gone on social media and someone says, "Name the last movie that you saw," and that's your date life, and someone says something like La La
Fantastic
Land,
Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them,
Suicide Squad. So this is kind of like that. So as I have linked to each of our players here, including myself, the full list of televised Doctor Who episode titles, everything that has aired all the way back to An Unearthly Child in 63. So given all of the names of those, and it's not just story titles, because you remember for the first season or two, even the individual episodes had their own names under the stories title. So those qualify as well. So from all of these different titles, you are going to choose the one that best describes each of the following aspects of your personal life. And they are as follows. Your childhood days. Your first date, as best as you can remember. Your high school years. Current relationship status, or whichever relationship status you want to share with the listening audience. And your current job. So given those five aspects of your life and times, go and find the episode titles that apply best to them see it.
Can we go ahead and just say right now, you are not allowed to pick An Unearthly Child for childhood days. That's just too
obvious.
Well,
fine. Screw you two.
Yes. Haley worked her way down the list, all of six pixels.
I'm not allowed to put that down for all of these?
Nope. All right. And we'll come back in one or two vorps. So I think we've got our lists, and Jay, I think that's going to be the best approach. So we'll just we'll take each one of these categories, and we'll each go around and just describe what our particular episode title is that best describes it. What order? We'll take it in the same order as we were doing the our discussion on the spinners there. So Jay, you had Torchwood first. So why don't you go childhood days?
All right, childhood days, and this one's easy. And nobody can refute this. Simply, Heaven Sent.
Oh, that's nice. I went with the Savages. And Haley, childhood days?
I was told I could not do An Unearthly Child, so Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. Okay. There's probably some sandbox time in there. All right. Next category is My First Date. Jay?
All right, you get no explanation. You have to decide for yourself what this means. It shouldn't be too difficult, but simply the twin dilemma.
Okay. I went with Fear Her.
The almost people.
The almost people. Oh, okay.
Nice.
Damn, I might have to. All right, anyway, I'll deal with that when the time comes. The high school years, Jay.
Come on, teenage guy, simply the rebel flesh.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I went with the faceless ones.
Silence in the library.
Nice. Relationship status, Jay.
Might be going a little too into detail, but kinda.
Relationship status, the caretaker.
Yeah, there you go.
Well done.
The relationship status, Cold War.
All right. And current job or occupation, Jay.
Carnival of Monsters.
That works. That definitely works. I personally am using the almost people for that one.
And I went with the long game.
That's true. Nice. That works too. Awesome. We might have to revisit this one later on. We should get passing fans off the street to play along with this one. This is kind of cool.
I had two or three for my previous job.
Okay. Previous job, yeah. Oh, previous relationship status. I had all kinds of things.
I think we were all going through like, I could use that one. No, that one's better. No, I got that one. Like, how many? I've got at least three crossed off here.
I have at least three categories where the Satan pit might have worked. So, hey.
Again, previous job. Also, the almost people.
All right. We should rock out some news.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, I wanted to put this one in there really not so much as a matter of a news item, because it isn't necessarily news so much as it is, well, it's relevant to everything that we've been discussing lately about new casting for Capaldi's replacement and so on and so on. But I put this in because this is, it's not even a conversation starter. It's an argument starter for a very unusual reason. This was an article from the Metro, written by a gentleman who I understand what his intent was. I'm just going to give you the title and I'm going to let you kind of run with it. I'll preface it a little bit, but this may be an entirely another discussion for a full episode as we go forward. And he headlined this thing as "Why a Female Doctor Who Won't Work and Why It's Probably Your Fault," quote unquote. The general gist of what he's trying to say is that he has absolutely nothing wrong with the idea of a casting of a female doctor. In fact, he openly welcomes it and thinks that it's high time. But he feels that the audience in some way is not going to be able to deal with it properly, and it may, at this moment, mark the death knell of the program. I'm going to rally against this for 1,000 different reasons, but I really wanted to throw that out there so that you two could kind of chew on it a little bit, and so our listeners can feel free to chime in on this, because this is something that I've been bringing up on more threads than I can now distance myself from. And I know that it has been a hotbed of discussion at Galley this past weekend. Deb Stanish just had a phenomenal panel just today, I believe, with 11 standing female cast and crew members up there to have this very kind of discussion about moving the program forward as far as female representation on the camera and behind the camera. So do you think that the audience, the global audience, I'm using a capital A audience here, cannot properly accept or is not ready to process a female doctor without really serving as a detriment to the viewership of the program right now?
You know, I've had this argument a number of times over the past few weeks, and I think that there is absolutely a large portion of the audience, a large portion of the diehard audience, that really does want a female doctor. But given all of the changes that are coming, everything like that, I think it's too much to ask for, and I think that the quote-unquote casual viewer of the show wouldn't be able to accept that with everything else that's changing. It would be something that would likely drive off a fair number of potential viewers.
Okay, I'm going to come down on the other side of this, because I think you're right. There is a portion of the audience that's going to be driven off, but that would be true of anything that was done. Just there's always a portion of the audience that when there's a new doctor or there's any change in the show, they get outraged and leave. And also, I think bringing in a female doctor has the potential to bring in a new audience. of people that might not have taken interest in the show before.
Yeah.
So I would think it's probably like a net zero to a net positive on the effect it would have on the viewership of the show, at least for that regeneration of the Doctor.
I think of the large number of people who still at this point have said that they haven't really come back around to the show since Capaldi stepped in because they can't identify with him. They don't really understand him. They don't like the appeal to it. They didn't like the tone of it and so forth. And that may have had the same kind of an audience shift out for the audience that shifted in to see, you know, what this established name was going to do with the role. Or people returning to it saying, oh, you're finally casting someone who's not under the age of 40 and dashing? Now I'll come back to the program. Harumph, harumph, harumph. So, you know, however that netted out. Jay, I absolutely get your point. I think it's actually brought up in this article as well when they're talking about the fact that, you know, if Chibnall's stepping in, you don't necessarily want to put him too much at a disadvantage for trying to hold the fort.
Right.
But at the same time, and this is an excellent argument that was brought up by a number of people. I know Alyssa from Whovian Feminism, a lot of the Verity team. We even had a couple of folks from over at other casts, whom I can't recall off the top of my head at the moment, were saying that look at Rogue One and everything that they've done within the Star Wars franchise recently. Look at some of the more, well, maybe not most recent, but some of the shifts they made within the Star Trek franchise over the past decade or so in terms of bringing key prominent female protagonists into, if not title roles, at least, you know, primary cast roles. And in some cases, yes, title roles. I mean, they're your primary protagonist. And what success those had as being these champions for not only female sci-fi viewers, but fans of all genders that said, okay, good, now this is finally something that reflects what we've wanted to see for a while. And Doctor Who could very easily take up the mantle on that and say, yeah, why not? I mean, they've skirted around it for long enough, you know, and giving you little hints of the fact that it could be done. Even most recently, you know, with, what happened back on, you know, the return to Gallifrey, and all of a sudden you've got a Time Lord regenerating in front of your eyes into a female and saying, whoa, okay, well, that's, yeah, and you don't bat an eye at it. You're like, okay, but we can do this. And it could be something that could bring, as Haley said, as far as a net, a sort of a delta in the viewing audience, could potentially open things wide. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say an untapped resource, but it's a viewing audience that may not have been given enough of an encouragement to say, we know you're watching and we are giving you what you have long since deserved. So I don't know.
I asked Jay this question when we had our big pontification about who could be the next Doctor. I very much believe there could be a female Doctor. Do you think there could be a young female Doctor, someone the age of, say, Matt Smith?
I would not be surprised, because there's obviously, you know, and this is, God, we might as well just make this the tagline for the show, and that's, hey, remember that Doctor Who is a business. They want identifiable, marketable characters and the casting they put behind those characters. So even if they were to do a female Doctor, they would probably go with one who is younger. They're going to go attractive, you know, what you would consider your classic aesthetics, because they're going to want to, if they're going to make a change like that, they're going to want to make this really poster material, billboard
capitalize
material.
Capitalize on it.
Absolutely. You know, and they're going to want, you know, products up the wazoo. There's going to be catchphrases. There's going to be outfits. There's going to be props. There's going to be all the things, because this is going to be a major change, and they're going to double down hard on it and really own it if they do it. So, and this is actually going to tap into some of the new stuff that we have to follow. But does that mean that we're all in the Hayley Atwell camp? I don't know. But
always Hayley Atwell. I mean, what? Why would you go with anyone else if you have the option of casting Hayley Atwell?
Yes. So that's Hayley Malley at io9.com. they've already pretty much just, they've already written her first couple paychecks.
All right. So let's go to the next article here.
Yeah. So the next thing I put in here is actually word from Chibnall. Chris Chibnall is actually now starting to give some great interviews. He's willing to sit in front of cameras and have his photograph taken, which is great because a lot of people were using stock photography from like the last 5 years because he has always sort of stayed behind the scenes. But this is a matter of phrasing, not in the Archer way. This is in how you want to translate the way that a line in print is read. And it actually becomes the title of the article itself. And that is that Chibnall is saying that when it comes time to casting the 13th Doctor, it will be done in the traditional way.
Trial by combat.
Yes.
I read that headline one way and then thought something completely different after I read this article.
Okay. So you could say cast in the traditional way, meaning, all right, they're going to have, you know, their principal producers sitting around a room and they're going to say, okay, let's come up with a list of names. And then we're going to start making some phone calls and see who's available and get them in for screen tests. Or you could read it as we're going to cast it in the traditional way, which is going to get them back to having, you know, we want, you know, this guy with his guy looks and his guy things doing guy stuff. And we're going to go back to classic Who Doctor casting. So how do you, after you've read this over, how do you walk away from this?
When I read the headline, I was thinking the casting itself would be traditional, which would to me mean, you know, middle-aged white guy coming in and being the Doctor. But after reading the article, I think it's, you know, they have a process that they use when they're casting. And they're going to use that same process that they've always used to find the next Doctor. Mm.
It's funny that they actually, I saw this article referenced, or you know how you know interviews and articles get repackaged and you see it listed on five different websites under five different titles. And if you follow the links, it all gets back to the original article. Well, when I saw this one pop up out in the news feeds out there, I saw them jump on both aspects of this based on what kind of clickbait they were going for. So they said, the shocking... The shocking revolution of Chris Chibnall coming in and returning Doctor Who to traditional casting. Dun, dun, dun. Whatever that means. And other people said, okay, next Doctor's going to be chosen in a traditional fashion, and we have to wait and see. Probably didn't get as much clicks.
Probably not, no.
You won't believe what Chris Chibnall had to say.
It's all about them page views.
Oh, jeez.
Well, according to the folks over at IO9, it doesn't matter what y'all think. It doesn't matter what you're betting on at all, because basically they have not even begun yet. Mm-hmm. And if you take this at face value, and if you really look at what everything has been said by everyone who's been interviewed along the way, they have not even begun, which means no one has even any more than a mental list. You know, I was talking with Julie about this earlier. I'm like, do you think there's a penciled list anywhere? Because we were reading the same articles. She said...
No, if anybody wrote anything down, they burned it.
Yeah, exactly. You write it down, and then you look around, you look left and right, you ball it up, and you eat it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we know, I mean, Chibnall has said, it's going to be a long time before we know.
Mm-hmm. I assumed it would be well after we see the next series. Probably up closer to when we see the Christmas episode.
Yeah. I think it's going to be something between the series proper end and the Christmas, and we'll start getting some... It's either going to leak or they're going to own it and say, you know.
I imagine that they're probably going to follow suit like what they did with Capaldi. They realize that there's no way they can keep it secret forever. So they're, instead of waiting for it to just come out on its own, they're going to announce it.
Yeah, get out in front of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But have some fun with it because it could potentially be a big deal based on the kind of decision that they make and the kind of changes that they decide to carry forth. It could be, you know, something they can really, really shout about.
Well, and because we've got that big, long break, I'm assuming it's going to be a big marketing thing. Like, you're excited about Doctor Who, right? Because here's your new Doctor. And, you know, a month of chaos will ensue.
Yeah. They'll probably go out and they'll contact Phantom Events and do all the regeneration episodes in the theater.
Oh, jeez.
As a big marathon that we watch.
They'll, like, you know, they had the release of the photo of Capaldi in the costume. They're going to do that, except they're going to do like one piece of the costume at a time. Like, here's the new Doctor's shoes. Here's the new Doctor's wristwatch.
Those look like feminine shoes.
Exactly. Oh.
How large is the face on that wristwatch? Could that be a man's watch? Dun, dun, dun.
Is it a man wearing a woman's watch or a woman wearing a man's watch?
But yeah, so the gist of this article, I mean, you kind of take it away from they're saying, you know, quoting here, No one is in consideration to be the next Doctor. No one is being looked at yet. Leading fans on that so-and-so is rumored or not rumored at this point.
It'll be like the Supreme Court justice reveal where they fake somebody driving their car to Cardiff.
And watch, John Barrowman's going to disappear for about 6 weeks just so that he can start a rumor mill. Oh, I've been in talks.
No. I can't possibly take that job. People might see me.
I don't know what you're talking about. So, yeah. And of course, they end the article with Haley's point that it has to be Miss Atwell.
Mm. Yep.
Exactly.
So we're all just fooling ourselves, really. I will also make sure that for folks that do not have a subscription to the UK TV trade magazine Broadcast, which put this article out with the interview with Mr. Moffat, it's worth it. You can at least get a synopsis of the article from, you just go to broadcastnow.co.uk and just search for anything related to Stephen Moffat, and you will at least get a small segment of it. You will have to pay a subscription to get the fullest article, but I'm sure it'll be referenced within other summary articles out there. It's definitely got a lot of really interesting things to chew on, because he gives some explanation of a number of things. You're talking about the decisions about the broadcast schedule for both Sherlock and Doctor Who, and interestingly, the fact that even he realized or admits to the fact that by the time he got around to series 7, he had felt a little uncomfortable with the program. There were things that he wasn't happy with. He refers to it as his third series. He calls it the only time doing Doctor Who where he felt that it was slipping away from him, and it wasn't quite in as much control of it as he felt it should be, and he wasn't enjoying it as much and was not pleased with the results. So I think we're all in agreement. Series 7 was a bit slapdash.
Yeah, so slightly.
That's reassuring anyway.
Yeah.
But man, I love the periods of speculation. I live for this stuff. I know it annoys us to death, but at the same time, just hearing everybody run off in 1,000 different directions is kind of humorous, because at least I know they're engaged.
Yeah, so. Especially at these points where we're not even getting any information to feed the speculation. It's just, you know, wild and rampant.
Pure rumor. Nothing, yeah. But it's running on wishes and Red Bull.
How much information has come out between the time where Ben Whishaw was the front runner to be the next Doctor to now where Tilda Swinton is the front runner? Like, there is literally nothing. Absolutely nothing has happened. It's just a shift in the fan base being like, well, since that's the main choice now, I'm going to go for this one.
Then. That's what's happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I'm really fascinated to get the breakdown from everybody hanging a galley to kind of see what the thought was with that too. Because especially, Tilda Swinton, I've had this conversation with a few folks just on her specifically right now about whether or not she could really carry the affability. I'm still on the fence on that one, but she's 7-2 odds. So I don't know,
because that means oh so much.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and look who else is still on the shortlist here. Olivia Colman from Broadchurch, or as I like to refer to her, is the funny one from Hot Fuzz. Things like that. So yeah, you never know. Simon Pegg, he's still out there somewhere in a short list. Couldn't he kill it? Man. Simon Pegg could kill it.
Nick Frost.
Oh, my God, Nick Frost. That's like the... That would have been really insulting. I almost said he's like the British Chris Farley of science fiction, but that would have been awful. It's not.
It's a good thing you didn't actually say that, you know. It's a good thing it didn't make it onto the tape.
Nope, I'm going to edit that right out. I'm not really going to edit that out.
No. I'm too tired. That would mean work.
I got to hit the delete button.
All right. Well, next week we will be returning to our classic rewatch with Terror of the Autons.
More this Autons. Is a getting creepier by the day.
This is going to be fantastic. Haley, you haven't seen this one yet, have you? This is going to be brand new for you.
Have I? I don't remember.
I don't. Did you see Joe Grant's?
I might have seen this one. I think I have seen this one.
I think you might have. I'm not really sure why it might have come. Oh, because
Luke is the Master.
Was it because it was a Master episode? Yeah.
Maybe. I don't remember why. I know I've seen at least one Third Doctor episode, and there were Autons in it, and I think it was this one.
It had to be this. Was Joe Grant in it?
Maybe. I don't know. It's been a while.
She's old. She drinks. She forgets.
So long ago, like a year ago.
All right. Well, we'll just have to see how that works out next week. But this has been episode 221 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, "Children of Earth, I win automatically."
And this is Kier saying, in the words of the beloved Joe Grant, who then became Joe Jones from the Sarah Jane Adventure episode, Death of the Doctor. "We'd been traveling down the Amazon for months, and we'd reached a village in Cristalino, and it was the only place in thousands of miles that had a telephone, so I called you. I just wanted to say hello, and they told me that you had left. You'd left unit. You'd never come back. So I waited and waited because you said you'd see me again. You did. I asked you, and you said yes. You promised. So I thought one day I'd hear that sound. Deep in the jungle, I'd hear that funny wheezing noise and a big blue box right in the middle of the rainforest. You see, he wouldn't just leave. Not forever. Not me. I've waited my whole silly life."
Great, I get to follow that. This is Haley saying, "Now I want to watch Hot Fuzz."
We'll see you guys next week.
I'll see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/GallifreyPublicRadio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.